How's that?
Richard, turn up your hair.
Turn up your hair, Richard.
Mm-hmm. I've been trying to turn up my hair for years. Miserable hair.
You didn't have turned up hair in the 80s? I just imagine both of you just had just glorious mullets.
Oh, yeah.
I did try and grow a mullet in the 80s, but I was actually trying to emulate David Bowie's haircut circa 1972, which was basically a mullet.
It was. A little ahead of his time with that, but we caught on eventually.
Breaking new ground with that one, I think.
Mm. Went to the bank the other day, and there's this Gen Z dude there with a weird, shall we call it a Ron Jeremy mustache, a dangly earring, and a weird mullet. It was a very... I was like, I don't know if I want you counting my money, to be honest.
Is Ron Jeremy still a reference we should be using?
Was he ever?
I feel he's got worse as the years have got on.
I don't think he's gotten worse. I think he was always a scumbag. I think that's pretty well known.
It's at this moment I noticed that we're recording, by the way. So that happened.
Yes, sir, we are.
That's right. We've been recording this whole time.
It is podcast day.
Look at us. Look at us go.
Look at this,
Brian. You haven't been sucked into a funnel cloud. That's nice.
That is one of the positive things about this conversation is there's tornadoes around and it hasn't hit me yet. So
we did actually have one of our listeners reach out and ask whether you were okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that was nice of them.
That was. I said yes because I thought they meant last week's tornado. I didn't know they meant this week's tornado.
Yeah. This time of year, it's kind of a daily thing.
But well.
Well, like it's been a while since you've been on the watch, though. Like it's been.
Today's the first time. Well, yeah, I mean, usually there's like watches where like conditions are right. Yeah, you know, conditions are good for a tornado. Today they're like, there's stuff flying around in the wind, so probably keep an eye on the old weather map, that sort of thing.
What do you do in that situation?
Hold on. I can't answer both at once.
Yes, you can. Answer simultaneously. Gee.
So what do? You basically hope that you have a basement or a crawl space or something that you can go down into. If not, then they say go into like a middle interior room, like a bathroom. And hope for the best, basically. Hope for the best. Don't drive around. Don't try to, don't try to get in the car and go find it or anything. That's about it.
They're so common in certain parts of the world, Tennessee too. I'm often surprised that there's not some sort of code or some sort of, or at least just more common, like to have a shelter.
Last year we were in a tornado.
Last year we were camping.
Really had to get that in there, didn't you, Richard?
Last year we were actually camping while a tornado went through the campground.
Great.
Well, and so then we were in a shelter. Well, we were basically in a bathroom. The whole campground was in the bathrooms, which is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And so, but where we were at, we were pretty lucky, like not any major damage. Oddly enough, the campground we were supposed to be at that weekend, we changed last minute, but the campground we were supposed to be at was about 15 miles away maybe, got demolished. Like people got hurt. It was terrible. It's still closed.
Wow.
Luckily, like we were supposed to be where the major damage was. I was just outside looking at the swirling clouds in the air going, I should probably get inside. This is not good. These are not normal clouds swirling around like this.
Now, as exciting as that all sounds, it also sounds like a frightful pain in the backside. And one thing about England is we may not have the greatest weather, but we never get anything extreme. The most extreme I've ever had is a fence panel has blown down. And that has sent me apoplectic, I can tell you.
That's a Tuesday around here.
Literally.
And that wasn't from a windstorm. That was just from some guy kicking it.
Yeah. That's from a goat jumping on it.
Okay. Well, I hope the storm comes nowhere near you, Bri.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, usually a lot of people worry about tornadoes, but they're usually pretty narrow. They're pretty small. So the chances of it actually hitting us is pretty small.
Never say that. Never mess with the odds on live streaming. Well,
not but live, I've seen this movie. I think if I just take a chain or some sort of strap and strap myself to, you know, a post, I think I'll be fine.
100%. You know? That's recommended by the federal government.
I sat out on a movie with some guy and some girl. It was called something about tornadoes. I forget what it was called now.
Twister?
Twister, that's the mm-hmm. one.
Where yep. the cow goes by.
The cow goes by. Yeah, they used. I think they used a belt and strapped themselves to some sort of fixture coming from the ground.
That would super work.
Oh, every time.
Yeah, that would super work. That's great.
The Chasing Tone podcast in no way endorses any of Brian Wampler's tornado protection strategies. Please do not follow them.
You know what? I was just realizing your shirt actually makes so much sense in this context.
Oh, because it says stay grounded?
Yeah.
It's supposed to have an electronic symbol on it, but the symbol wore off. So now I go into places and they're like, you're such a positive guy. I love that shirt. I'm like, it's actually like, kind of a joke.
You're like, shut your mouth. I mean,
shut your mouth while I insert this electrode into it.
Hey, it's supposed mm-hmm. to be an electrician joke, but the joke part wore off.
So now you just look like up.
Now it's just a positive coach. Message. Yeah, right.
Good stuff.
Man, good for a guy with such a nice shirt, he sure is grouchy.
Right. So, weather report out of the way.
Yes.
There's a joke in there somewhere, I'm sure. What have you been up to, chaps?
Oh, just making April Fool's jokes that nobody sees. That's all. How about you?
Well, I think a fair few did see our April Fool joke.
Yours was great.
And I think a fair few actually thought it was real. Allow me to show you the new Wampler Rockstortion pedal. It's going to be very disappointing for you. But it is, in fact, a Black 65... and a pair of really cheap headphones.
I have to say, Richard, I've been waiting to say it on the podcast because I knew we would be talking. You did a fantastic job on that image. That looks, so good.
I was literally wondering, how did he get that printed?
Oh, thank you, guys. I mean, let me explain the process I went through, Bryce, so you can understand.
Maybe we should explain what it is in case anybody hasn't seen it.
Let's dial that back first. So, it was April Fool's Day, All Fool's Day, and me and Bri were chatting. I was like, what should we do? And so Bri came up with the idea of doing everyone wants us to make a Rockman, like the Tom Schultz. Is it the Rockman X100? Is that the version that people stan about the most? I'm not an expert in this
matter. I'm actually trying to learn this myself, so I'm accumulating Rockmans right now, just in case you're wondering.
I found this out by reading forums.
Yes. So I'm not exactly sure what the go-to one is, because I hear conflicting reports. I know some people like the Soloist, which is like a little headphone amp. Other people like the big rack mount version, which is like the Sustainer, I think, or something like that. So I'm not sure. I can't give you a good answer on that.
And there's that. Is it the Distortion? I want to say Distortion Factory, but it isn't that. It sounds like it should be called that.
No, but the Digitech had a Distortion Factory. DF7.
What's the Rockman Distortion thing called? It's got a weird name.
I thought it was just the Distortion. No.
I don't know. It's got its own weird little distortion generator. That's what I'm looking
for. Oh, that's another version of the Rockman stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people seem to dig that sound too. So anyway, Brian was like, why don't we make a Rockman fake pedal? And in the back of my mind, I remembered this like really 1980s advert for the Rockman. I was like, Brian, why don't we take that old 1980s ad and recreate it? And that's exactly what we did do.
It's great, man.
Piece by piece. So I built it, Bri, exactly as I would an advert for a professional magazine. I basically laid out all of the type in InDesign exactly as if we were sending it to a magazine, copied all of the Rockman style fonts, and then I created the background graphic as if it were a real pedal I was making for you. So I went into Illustrator and had to create like a an actual. I've got, see,
I wonder if you actually made the set for it. I was like, because damn, it looked just like the actual ad.
It looks so good.
So what I did
and
was,
so I'm like, maybe he photoshopped a pedal into the old ad in some way. I literally was trying to figure out how you did it.
No, I built that totally from the ground up. Literally, just kind of overlaid my work on top.
So this is, and Brian, the bill for that is $4,000. Happy April Fool's Day.
I may have made a terrible mistake. No, I tried to keep it reasonable. Honestly, it was a lot more work. When I set out, I was like, this is a funny idea. I did not realize how much work it was going to be because, like I said, not only did I have to like analyze the old advert, lay out an advert like it, I had to create the pedal design as if it were a real pedal. So should we ever get the necessary clearance from Tom Schultz to produce the Rockstortion, I have that as an actual Illustrator file. Then take a photo of a pedal in the same angle as the original Rockman and digitally manipulate the graphics onto that pedal. And I had to get headphones because the whole thing with the Rockman is it shows the headphone. I was like, I've got one day, but I need to source the crappiest looking headphones I can. Amazon never fails to deliver. They are literally £5 headphones, bro.
£5, that's heavy.
That's, well, I mean, he was a
seven
of
your US dollars. I think we should auction them off to charity.
The headphones?
The original.
The charity would be like, no thanks.
I think I'll take the money. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun making that. It did fool a fair number of people, Brian. I think I went to enough length. The comments I really enjoyed were people that were like, dude, this looks like it was out of a 1980s guitar magazine. I'm like, I have succeeded. Yes. I mean, I did copy.
Oh, yeah, it looked great. I thought it was amazing. I literally saw it and thought, that would be a cool-ass pedal.
I mean, it has made me... I was like, Brian, actually, I do want you to make that.
I mean, it's made me think a couple of things. One, I should look at older adverts for new adverts because they do stand out well. But two, Brian, maybe we should make a Rockman.
Wonder if anybody's been doing that lately.
Maybe we should make a Rockman.
I wonder if anybody's been using old advertisements as inspiration. Huh, interesting. Interesting thought.
Probably.
Are you stealing stuff off JHS Boomers? Is that what you were getting to?
I'm just saying. We've been doing that for a while.
He's like, if you could only see him, he's like kicking his feet like kind of in the sand a little bit, kind of rubbing them around like a little kid would do, like, well, you know.
It was a risk though, Bri, because like basically you didn't get to see the artwork until the day it was released. Because it did end up taking me 4 days to do because it was three stages. I started it on Good Friday and finished it on the Sunday before. And I was like, well, he's in bed now. So, yeah, it did take a while. I spread it out because I had time to kill. But so that was a lot of fun. There were some very high quality April Fool's gags this year. My favorite was clearly Robert Fripp saying he was now on OnlyFans, which I shared with you guys. I loved the Warus Audio box of jacks, which is kind of similar. Cusack did a similar one.
Yeah, Cusack's was my favorite because it addresses the thing that we've all, every time a pedal comes out, well, if only I had the jacks in the wherever, in the top side, corners, wherever. Somebody's always like, well, if it had jacks there, well, I would buy it. And so he
made a pedal had jacks on every side of the pedal. Now you can't complain.
Yeah, except he actually made it. He's one of the few that actually made it.
He legit made it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chibson and Blammo did the priority delay, which was really funny.
Which is a real pedal.
Mailbox. Yeah.
That's an actual real pedal they made, which I think they're selling now. And how about Stringjoy?
Stringjoy didn't do anything. Gun Street, we did the Tone Oil. Similar to Richard, it took way longer to make that video than it was probably worth. I was really happy with it, though. I was surprised that nobody on the team at Gun Street. Hi, Sean, you're hearing this. Scott, nobody that actually saw it I thought the funniest part was the joke about child labor, but nobody even seemed to catch that. It was
my favorite bit too, dude. But the problem is,
Scott was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, there's all kinds of trouble."
The problem was, your little child looked too good at what he was doing. He didn't look impoverished at all. He looked like he was earning good dollar from doing what he was doing and was probably bossing you all around.
He was loving life. He was living life and loving it.
I'm sure it's like a Tesla key hanging out of his pockets.
Right. I had to cut his hands out and like just zoom on the face because he was actually working on a drone. And that wouldn't have made a lot of sense in that context. But I found it while looking for soldering. I was looking for soldering and there was plenty of people soldering. And I just saw this kid working on a drone and I was like, aha, a child labor joke. That's got to be really funny.
He would have needed to have just been wearing like a singlet with like grease stains on it for us to have bought that as child labor. We just looked at that. Man, that would have been better. Capitalism working its finest. It was a good April Fool's. I think there were quite a few funny gags out there. And I apologize for anybody that I've offended. There was one guy who said, "This is the worst thing I've seen. I am now unsubscribing from your Instagram." I'm sorry, one dude. I didn't mean to offend you.
What?
Wait, what? From ours or from Blake's?
From ours.
Because the Rockman?
Yeah, it offended that one dude. I always offend that one dude.
Hold on. I'm trying to understand the mentality here. How are you offended?
Perhaps he looked at it, went, yes, and then realized it was fake and was like, oh, you've just fooled me, you tricky tricksters.
My life has no meaning now.
I'm having a flashback to high school when all the kids pointed at me because my fly was down.
I mean, that isn't funny. I'm just going to let you know. And we did agree not to talk about that on air, but sure.
So that happens to all guys, I think. And I've always just been like, yeah, I know. Because that makes it more awkward. Because then you're like, I know it's down. I want it down because I'm getting some air cooling in here.
Listen, you know? It's hot, okay? Right. I live in Indiana. It's hot, okay?
Only
just make it more awkward.
Chasing Tone podcast can make the leap from the Tom Schultz Rockman to air-cooled private parts. There is no other. Listeners, do you understand what value we bring you with this tangential nonsense that we've spout regularly? Wow. Well done, Bri. Mm-hmm. That's better than I could have
been. Well done. Well done. Well done.
Unlike your flies, which remain undone, apparently.
Undone.
Of course. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Summertime's coming.
That's why Weezer wrote that song about me. They weren't talking about sweaters, though.
I was going to say the sweat.
I don't know where this is going, sweaters? And I don't like it. I'm a bit scared if I'm going to tell the truth.
Want to destroy my trousers? I don't know.
If you want to destroy my trousers.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pull the zipper and just walk away.
Before we move on with another subject that's quite interesting in a weird way, we have to get to this listeners comment that we've had at the top of our document for literally three months now, Bri. I hope I say it correctly.
I think it's 3 weeks, but I'll go with it. Yeah.
3 weeks, 3 months. I don't know whether to say his name or not because I don't know who it is. So I'm just going to not say it. But this listener said, we'll call him Nathan. What a code word that was. Right. Just had.
We'll call him Nathan, like his name.
A quick question regarding buffers. I know you've discussed before about having a buffer at the start of your chain to help negate some tone drop from the cable. But I was wondering if it was then also worth having one later in my chain as well. Kind of like a chain of buffers.
Okay.
Okay, that's
Is that a question or?
Well, there's a question mark there. I thought before reading the second part, I'd let you answer.
You addressed the first one. Okay.
I mean, I have an opinion, but Brian knows how it actually works, so I could probably let him talk about it. I would say maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole thing. Like, there's like no right way to do it. Personally, I put a buffer at the beginning, and unless there's like a fuzz face or something where I don't want it buffered, then I'll put the buffer after that pedal. Mm-hmm. And generally, I don't have anything towards the end unless I have some other pedal that I know is going to be like a higher output impedance. So let's say, a OCD, a little higher output impedance on the end. So if I have that pedal on, then it's nice to have another buffer at the end. But there's so many pedals now that are just designed well, and mm-hmm. you generally have a low output impedance. So usually it's not really a need that often anymore.
The only time that I do one at the end is if I know I got a big old cable run for some reason, which isn't that often anymore. But back in the day, I actually tried running. I was in a nice studio that had one of those setups where you can have your amp head in the room with you, plug your speaker cable in, and the cab was in a separate room. And yep. for whatever reason, this amp was not liking that. It sounded really, really bad when plugged, running that long of a cable, which I didn't understand because that's like a high power signal going out to it. So it was confusing to me, but it sounded bad. So it ended up sounding better to run the instrument cable into that ISO booth and just put the head on top of the cab and have a short speaker cable. So it was like a 30 plus foot cable run. And I definitely had a buffer on the output of that just to try to help that along a little bit, but.
Yeah, I can see that.
But if you, like you said, if you have a pedal that has low output impedance, I just didn't know. So I was like, well, I'll just put one on there, give it a little boost.
Often, like, we don't know, right? Like, the average guitar player isn't looking at schematics saying, well, what's the output impedance on this thing right here? Mm-hmm. I mean, no one's doing that, right? So I get it. I understand. Yeah. But I mean, I just don't sweat it that much.
Unless, I think if you notice, like, hey, I got this long cable and it's kind of darkening things up a bit because it's got a lot of capacitance, then go ahead and throw a buffer on there and it'll probably take care of it.
Mm.
So is there, is it fair to say that you're never really going to know without testing what the output impedance of any pedal is for a start? Because unless you know the schematic or you're testing it somehow, they're all going to vary, Bri, or will most of them be?
Most of them are pretty, especially ones that have been made or designed here lately, the past 15 years or so. It's pretty common practice to design it in such a way that the output impedance is lowish, meaning not high output impedance, which is then going to make things darker. Like, mm-hmm. And an example of that would be the Marshall Governor pedal, where the output impedance was pretty high. And so as a result, anytime you kicked like a delay on or something like that with it, which would be buffering the signal, then you'd be like, why did my distortion pedal suddenly get brighter? This is terrible. And it's because the output impedance was so damn low that once you added a buffer with it in combination with all that cable, you now didn't have like that quote unquote tone suck going on. And so it made your distortion pedal sound like it was brighter all of a sudden whenever you kicked on your whatever pedal, chorus pedal. And as a result, people were saying, these chorus pedals are bright. No, you're just using a pedal that has a high output impedance and you kick it on and you're thinking it makes the signal brighter when it's actually just being a buffer and doing what buffers do.
I see. So to address the second half of
this question.
Oh,
that's a big buff. Oh, wait.
Ah. Very good. Well, not the one I built. But to address the second part, which you kind of have, but let's be comprehensive. Is it good to have a mix of true bypass and buffered bypass pedals on your board to help with tone drop? Or really, I mean, if we're saying that unless you're using a very weird impedance pedal, as you say, like a governor or something like that, but generally speaking, if you've got a regular type of cable running around your pedal board, surely it won't make any difference if you're mixing true and buffered bypass, as long as you're not, putting a buffer before a fuzz or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's really not a problem. I don't even worry about it personally. But, I mean, I did do a video once where I think I stacked like 10 boss pedals or something together in bypass mode and then bypassed them all to show that because those types of buffers aren't a true one-to-one, meaning you let's use volts, for example. You give 1 volt of signal in, it doesn't give 1 volt of signal out. It's like 0.95 or something like that, 0.98, I think. Which means that once you start stacking those, you lose a bit of volume. Mm-hmm. And your tone isn't suffering. Like the EQ of things isn't bad. You just get a lower overall output with that many boss pedals in a row. And so like the thing to do there is, okay, well, just boost up on the output a little bit. Just smidgen. It's not a bad
technical
thing.
Term there, listeners, a smidgen.
A smidgen. Smidgen is a little more than just a smidge.
You know? We measure all our potentiometers in smidgens.
Smidgens.
We only buy 8,500 smidgen potentiometers for our pedals.
That actually sounds like something. Yeah. Marcus Reeves and I, when we were recording the podcast, we were talking about squelch. And we were both like, I don't know what squelch is, but it sounds like a funny control. And I was thinking about the CB radios.
CBs, that's what I was thinking.
And
I guess that's where it most
It's like a noise gate, kind of.
It's like a noise gate. Yeah.
I didn't really, when I was saying it on the podcast, I was explaining it really poorly. I knew what it did, sort of, but it was like, oh, it's a noise gate. Like, I was saying it like an absolute idiot.
Next time we put a noise gate in a pedal like we did the gearbox, we ought to call it the squelch.
It's a much more fun name, but also more confusing.
And this is where, you know, our philosophies on design may differ a bit. Yes, it's fun to call a controller squelch, but in 5 years' time, when you look at that pedal and are like, what does the squelch button does? Let me consult the manual. Oh, where's the manual? Well, it's online, of course. But yeah, no, I hear you. Actually, this is a good segue, though, Bri. And this actually, bizarrely, ties in with the Rockstortion. Because this weekend is going to be the first rehearsal of the band that I'm trying out with, which is a 1980s kind of tribute band. And two of the songs that we're playing have a sort of metal-y tone. One is Animal, Def Leppard, off Hysteria. And the other is Born to Be My Baby by Bon Jovi, or Bon Jovi's version. I'm pretty sure they wrote it. I don't know, though. So I've built a little board to take with me. And at first I was thinking, I'm going to take a plexi because I love my plexi and yada, yada, yada. And then I was like, if only there was a pedal. And well, I was going to take a plexi, and then I'll take a tumnus, and then I'll take a chorus, and then I'll take a delay. And I was like, if only there was a pedal that combined like a plexi sound and a tumnus into one, and wouldn't it be awesome if that pedal had a noise gate in it? Oh, wait a minute. That would be the gearbox.
A gearbox?
Literally the perfect single pedal drive pedal to take to a rehearsal, because you've got a lower gain setting with the tumnus side. You then got a really nice high gain setting that you can gate perfectly, or you can mix and match the two to go over the top if you need to. Plus, you can stick a pedal in the middle of it if you're so inclined. However, what I've gone with, Bri, is Gearbox Ego 76, my cheapo chorus from Behringer, although I might put, if things go well, I might put a Terraform on there, because then I'd have phase as well as chorus, right? A faux tape echo, which I'm really just using for a little bit of slapback. And I bought an ISO 5 power supply from Harley Benton. That thing's tiny. It's like the size of a packet of cigarettes, but it's powering the whole mini board. So I am board ready.
Good job.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I wonder if that is an isolated output on that Harley Benton.
It says so.
So does the MXR ISO brick. So does lots of things. And
I know.
You know.
It doesn't sound bad. I've tried it out.
It might be.
A little sucker, though. It's nice.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah.
It's just a little tiny board there.
Harley Bentons aren't that prevalent over here.
No, because it's essentially Toman's home brand, isn't it? and Toman is...
Yeah, it is.
Right. Although they're made in Asia, it's essentially Toman's brand, I believe.
Yeah.
But no, the board sounds good. I need to figure out how to dial the chorus in right for that kind of Def Leppard sound, because it's a...
That is a Rockman.
Exactly. So I think I've got my chorus dialed too wet. I think it's really needs
to be... Well, so I can tell you, like on the Rockman, it's a really slow rate and a really deep depth.
Slow rate, deep depth. These are numbers I like, Bri. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I'll try that out. And I've also put your settings in for the ego to get the best kind of muted sound when I'm playing palm mutes with it. Because there's a lot of, like, one of the songs is Sledgehammer, which is not a great song to play on a guitar. It's literally just like a little muted staccato rhythm. There is. But if you listen to it, it's just literally a little palm mute jobby. And there's also some sort of reggae numbers in there. I forget what it's called.
Those are songs that's when you go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I tried that one. I tried that one last week when I said to you, hey, it's okay. It's okay for me to only learn 6 or 7 of these 12 songs. And you both went, no, you must learn them all. So I have since got round to learning all of them. And
you're feeling more confident as a result.
I am. Break My Stride by Matthew Wilder. That's the...
Never gonna become a stand.
That's the reggae number. But again, all you've got going on in there is some really tiny little palm muted riffs and a weird ass solo, which I need to work on.
Oh, wow. That's a kind of a weird song to play. There's a lot of changes going on in that one.
Yes, there are. Yeah. But again, all he's really playing in it is just a little palm muted lick here and there. It's all about the keys. Other than...
Music was so much more intricate back then.
It's almost as if people had to like put real efforts into crafting songs and recording them.
It's sort of like the record industry, the record company industry ruined everything by saying, oh no, we've noticed that every song that's less than 3 minutes does better and these three chord structures do the best. So just write songs with these three chord structures.
Okay, Papa.
Hot take. Yeah. I think what we need is a new audio sting that just says boomer alert and like there's like a klaxon playing. Because we've been playing it a lot, Bri, because I don't disagree with you.
Boomer alert.
Much as I do believe that more good music is being made today, simply by virtue of the fact that there's more tools in the hands of more creative people than ever before, I also find it harder to actually get into anything. Well, there is music that I've got into recently. Agnes Obel. I will just say that.
I don't know if that's a person or what it is.
Exactly.
Blake is showing us a Maxon delay pedal with mini Bucket Brigade chips inside of it.
Can I have those chips? They're hard to get hold of.
Is there a reason why you're showing us this pedal, or are you just showing us that you have... You know what? Look at all those trim pots in there. You know what you should do? Just start adjusting.
Just start.
That's what those are for.
All right, let's do it. Get it in there.
Just so you know, if you do that, probably not going to do the delay anymore.
Probably. I noticed this weird thing on it. This is why I wanted to show it to you. Maybe you can see it, maybe you can't. You see that cap right there?
Oh, can we zoom in a bit more? Hold on. Yeah, hold on.
Is that focused?
Basically,
to get it.
Nope.
Kind of, this kind one at the moment.
Looks like you're using a potato for a camera.
This here has a little
that
pink dot on it.
That electrolytic cap there?
Yeah, that cap's got a pink dot on it from the factory. Uh-huh. It's like clearly not like a... It looks like they did it at Maxon. Why would they put a pink dot on a random electrolytic cap?
Because the red marker was not working that day.
But none of the other ones have dots on them.
That's a special capacitor.
They only... I want you to go to the Maxon factory and ask them why.
I'm going to guess that they did that because they didn't have any other markers.
But why does it need marked when none of the other ones are marked?
That's a special capacitor.
What does it do?
It capacitates.
Anyway, I mostly held it up because I thought it was pretty.
I don't know why they would mark it.
They used to mark polarity with like a red marking across the sort of top of the side that was either negative or positive, if you follow which way I'm going. But maybe it was that. What sort of marking is it? Is it a semicircle?
It's just a pink dot just on the top of the cap.
Is it marking on the negative side or the positive side?
It's kind of in the center.
Maybe that means that we couldn't...
The capacitor is leaked, and that is electrolytic fluid coming out of it. That's what that pink dot means.
I think you're supposed to change the fluid on your electrolytic capacitor.
Is that when the capacitor's dried out?
Yeah. You got to change oil in it. Got to change oil.
Well, I do know that this thing sounds really, really, really good.
Yeah, those are cool.
And it's really pretty inside. I like to look at it. That's why I held it up. It's pretty.
I like how they've done the foot switch as well. Like, it's kind of a bit old school there, isn't it? No.
It is. It is a double pull, double throw.
Yes.
And those types of switches are, I hate to say it, but they're kind of known to go out.
Shut up. Sure.
But I only say that because back then there wasn't.
Wait, does that have an LED?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
Okay.
You use a transistor to control the LED.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because that won't be wired into the switch if it's only double pole, double throw.
You just use a transistor. Basically, off of the signal, you use a transistor to tell it to turn on. See, transistors are actually kind of like switches.
Switches, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you use it in a certain way, you can like turn on and off things.
Here's another question, and maybe you can kind of see this. See how all the resistors are vertical?
Yeah.
That seems like a rather time-consuming way to do it.
Spin it back again.
It saves space, but it...
Oh, sorry. Here you go.
I've noticed a lot of companies do this over the years. It saves space, but it does create more opportunity for radio frequencies.
Yeah.
That's... And noise. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I remember you talking about it being like a little antenna. So I thought, why would they do that? And it looks harder to do.
But I wonder what year that is. I mean, I wonder if that's right before, you know, surface mount is obviously not available to them, if they're manufacturing that in, like,
quantity.
I think that feels like the 90s, probably. That looks a little bit old tech
for the 90s, I would have thought.
I'm pretty sure this was made in the 90s. I'm like 80% sure. Maxon 80900. I'm 90%
sure it was made in the 80s. How about that?
80999, is that what it is?
It's a 80900. The 999 was later.
Okay. Wow, them's expenses. Woof.
They can be. Especially when they have the people love them MN3005s. They love them things.
Yeah, the good old Bucket Brigades. Mm-hmm.
Because they have the later 900s have four chips instead of two, because I guess mm-hmm. they couldn't squeeze the time out of the chips they had available at the time.
Yep. So. Yep. They just add more chips.
Some people are like, did old ones sound better, which is what this one is? And I'm like, I'm guessing they sound real close. Maxon's not known for putting out garbage.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I know people like to believe in the magic of things, but... To me, it's kind of not the most important part of the circuit.
What, the magic bit? It's
Benson's delay is a PT-based one.
What, the Bucket Brigade is? How so?
I guess it won't bucket the brigade if you don't have a Bucket Brigade.
Hey, it's a bucket ain't big enough inside that brigade.
That's right.
Got a bigger bucket in that brigade.
How about that compander? I got that compander in there.
Yeah, the compander circuits inside of a delay is a cool thing.
It can affect a lot of things, and even I know that. Look at me go. Whoa.
So it's getting dangerously technical. Yes, so I'm going to try and remove it from that. No, sure. Actually, I'm going to get more technical.
We can steer it back away from audio engineering.
Or you can look inside for another 10 minutes.
I do like the look of that. We're going to steer it towards some... deep faking stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a quick shout out, though, to the program controllers of BBC4 who almost certainly listen to this show about their specials night last Friday. So the specials are Two-Tone Ska Originators, Bride. Does that make any sense to you?
Two-Tone Ska Originators.
Two-Tone was a kind of... It's more than a music, but it was a culture, a youth culture of the late 70s in England, and ska was a culture of the sort of 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I'm familiar with ska music.
Yeah, but you see, over there, ska music has a bit of a bad name because it is associated more with like modern ska music. But over here, it's associated with bands like The Specials, The Selector, and Madness, and people like that, and is revered as being absolutely brilliant. And Terry Hall died last year, who was the lead singer of The Specials. Mm-hmm. They did a night on him. He has done so much music. He's had, like, he wasn't just The Specials. He also was in the sort of split-off group from that Fun Boy 3. And I guarantee, even though that just sounds like three words to you, you will know their music. Brian is now menacingly waving a painting brush in my direction, which I don't really understand. And also in his solo career with The Colour Field, he just did so much. And they played literally 3 hours of awesome music. So I had my stereo a-pumping. So, yeah, The nice. Specials. That's my tribute. But, guys, have you actually seen the video from Rob Chapman where essentially there are scams out there that are using a deep fake version of Rob Chapman to sort of get you to enter a winner, you know, Gibson Les Paul.
I did see that. And it wasn't
that the... That is scary.
It was...
So it's a video deep fake of Rob?
Yep.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And it's apparently not, Anderton's are suffering with this as well. So if Anderton's and Rob have this problem, it's going to be bigger than everyone else sooner or later.
I'm surprised it's in the guitar industry. I mean, I spoke about this a while back when I was talking to you guys. I'm like, you know how many hours of footage our voices are on?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be some sort of authentication tool.
Well, I think, how about this? If you don't hear it on this podcast feed or my podcast feed or something from the official channels, it's not real. Period. Like, if you get Brian Wampler 1234 messaging you and sending you a video saying, you've just won a free Tumnus.
You'd be surprised how many times I've had a person that said, hey, I contacted you and gave you my information on WhatsApp. Where's my pedal? I'm like,
right.
You can't be this gullible. Like, it is impossible for you to be this
like,
gullible.
Like, if it doesn't have Wampler pedals or something official behind it, it's not real, you know, unless it's Richard
WamplerPedals2.com. We've had this quite a bit on the boutique brands because a number of them ran email competitions last year. Give your email address, win XYZ. And there are companies out there of scammers that just look for these particular platforms and these particular types of competition and send you a misdirection scam, which is like, hey, you entered this competition, go here to claim your prize. And sadly, you know, a lot of people do fall for it because they are not that tech savvy, for want of a nicer way of putting it, because they will make these look very official. But the next level of it is clearly the AI deep fake video, bro.
Right.
Yeah, and we've known this was coming for a long time. I, too, am a little bit surprised that it's hitting Chapman first. Not that he's not a big YouTuber. He is. But I'm surprised that one of the first real examples that we're seeing is in the guitar space.
So I have an idea. What if we deepfake Josh Scott and we get this deepfake to make a JHS show where they do nothing but talk about Wampler pedals, which drives the demand up for Wampler pedals, and I profit.
The problem is you're going to have to also hack the JHS show channel to get it on there.
I'll just use ChatGPT for that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it'd be cheaper and more cost effective to just pay Josh. You should just pay him and at that point be done with it.
That is not as much fun as making a deepfake of Josh saying, Brian is is probably my biggest inspiration for my success.
He's also really sexy.
He's also hot as hell.
Everyone will know it's a deepfake then. Hold on. Wait. We've seen him. We've seen him. Hold on. That's a deepfake, Josh.
I think it's that shiny bald head of his. I think that's what does it.
In some circles. Hey, if it was going to work for Robert Fripp, it could work for you too.
Hey, that's true. That's true.
I mean, he looked pretty ripped. If that wasn't like a body superimposition, he looked pretty ripped for a man who's in his 70s. So, you know, something about his lifestyle, it's probably all the guitar exercises he does. He has phenomenal fingers.
Body superimposition is my next album, actually. So, yeah.
Nice. In your rap career. That would be a perfect, yes. Perfect rap album.
My name is Blake, and I'm here to say...
Going down the dope rhymes.
Do you know who I started listening to again recently, Bri? I went through a little bit of I watched the documentary. I was like, you know what? I haven't listened to them for ages. Cypress Hill. Cypress Hill were groundbreaking in their day.
Yeah, oh, man.
When Insane in the Membrane. Second album dropped.
Insane in the Brain.
Please don't do that. I will have a hernia if I laugh anymore, Bri.
Before you go too much further, Richard, I just must express my complete and utter astonishment that you might be a Cypress Hill fan.
Yes.
Well, next, are you going to tell me you're a big fan of, I don't know, Bob Marley?
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg. Yeah.
All of those guys. Well, look, I mean, it came from NWA, clearly. So, you know, I started listening to NWA, and then I was listening to Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, and Dr. Dre bought out The Chronic, and the rest is history.
The rest is history.
I loved that era of music, man. I was into it. Of course, it was exciting at that time.
It was exciting.
Yeah, you know, it's good stuff.
You know what I just threw on the other day? Just no reason whatsoever. I just decided this is what I'm listening to.
A leather thong?
Ludacris.
No? Oh. No.
It's not Ludacris? Patreon yet.
Yeah, I never Ludacris. Got into Ludacris as much. I must have started. I think I grew out of that and grew into a Pearl Jam thing.
Luda got Pearl big in like late 90s, early 2000s. So it might have been just a bit past your normal hip hop phase.
So late 90s, early 2000s, I had discovered Brent Mason. I had
very similar
on the,
musically, the very similar. Ludacris and Brent Mason often mentioned in the same breath.
That's right.
Yeah. I was doing the country gigs back then. So like, I tell you what, bub. You know, here's how we do this guitar stuff, Richard.
Oh, I know why I was listening to Ludacris, and I can't say who, but a friend of mine reminded me that he once flew on a Ludacris's private plane with him and one other guy and spent like 2 days with Luda. I forgot. That's why I started listening to him. Yep. I forgot about that story.
How does that happen to a person?
I still don't know. I still am not sure how that happened.
Out of everybody that we know in the music industry, no one has ever said, hey, Brian, you should come on my plane with me.
This was before music industry even. He was like doing something else in high school or late, just after high school or college. I don't even remember the full story. I just know he flew on a plane with Ludacris and I'm jealous. That's what I know.
Yeah, I've got a friend who he had like a, I don't know, a hotel suite, and he got a phone call from reception like, can we move you to a different room? And he's like, why? He's like, we've got a VIP guest who wants the best suite and you're in it. And he's like, well, who's the VIP guest? He's like, it's Snoop Dogg. And like, he's like, okay, send him up. I'll talk to him and we'll figure it out. And I'm like, he doesn't even like that sort of music. And he just like got to hang with Snoop Dogg and like negotiate the terms of handling. I'm like, why does this happen to other people? Whereas
like,
me,
what's up, Calvin?
I go and
doing?
Do someone a favor, lend them some of my pedals, and they get a number one selling album, number one sellout tour on every single TV show in this country at the moment is a face that just reminds me that he has 15 of my gosh darn it pedals.
You know, I'll say this and then we'll get on to the executive producers, but I'm picturing if it was Richard who was negotiating the deal with Snoop Dogg, all you see is Richard dragging a suitcase and a trash bag full of weed behind him going down the hall of the hotel. Going,
yep. Successful, we came to an agreement. Deal. Yeah, we came to an agreement.
These are scurrilous rumors and I refute every one of them.
I took one day's worth of Snoop Dogg's weed and I'll be good for 3 months.
He apparently smokes like over 100 joints a day. I don't think that's even physically possible. It's like
does he actually get oxygen into his lungs?
It's probably not on purpose. He did. Yeah. Right, anyway, to Patreon we go.
Oh, all right. We got to talk about some executive producers.
So yeah, we're going to do some new one this week.
All right, let's go. Let's see what we got here. I'd like to thank Bill Bays, Justin Burke, David Tindall, Night Haas, Dave Trombetti, Shannon Weaver and the band Reduced to Rust, Eric Wilson, Vidar Frostad, Michael Freer, Sean Arbo of Gun Street Wiring, Rick Calhoun of Honey Picks, Patrice Fournays, Dylan Talks Tone, Scientific Uppercut, Kevin Harrington, Barry from Grez Guitars, Tom Kelly, Jake Young of Man the Helm Podcast, Pigsy, John O'Neill, Robert Carr, Hunter Hudson, Rob Stokes, El Gibberito, Nick Spano, Sasha Sir, Jay Stratton, Seth Williford, Harry Post, Grumpy Mike, Harvey Petals, Allison Carroll, Patrick Zeller, Bum Laser, Anthony Stevens, Chris Brown, no, not that Chris Brown, Philip Carter of the 40 Watt Podcast, Mark Bauman, Christopher Logan, Jason Englehart, Da Crowhawk, Dylan Lewis, Josh, and James Thompson.
Can you do me a favor and say, this is NPR, and this is the Chasing Tone Podcast.
This is NPR, and you've been listening to the Chasing Tone Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone Podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com, and Richard can be reached at richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is to share this podcast with a friend, leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts. Also, check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. And make sure you check out WamplerPedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course, guitar effects. If you'd like to hear the post-podcast conversations and to get even more content, twice the amount of podcast episodes, simply check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ChasingTonePodcast. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.